In your face. Fiona, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks so much, James. It's great to speak to you again.
Look, there must be so many federal laws and regulations that would need to be changed to legalise marijuana. Talk us through that.
It's interesting, James. When I looked into this, and I have to say, I've actually been looking at this for quite some time, even when I was a state member of parliament, there is actually one simple law that we need to do to ensure that cannabis can become legal in Australia. And it's a simple amendment to the Federal Crimes Act Criminal Code, which, because, so for your listeners, you know, under our constitution, federal laws override state laws. So if there is a federal law that says it's illegal to possess, distribute or grow cannabis, that makes it very difficult for states to legalise that because the federal act overrides it. So what I want to do is just appeal those sections of the act, which will then enable the states to set up the regulatory systems for cannabis. And this is what the Prime Minister said. He said it's a state matter, not a federal one. And this small change will lead the way for states like Victoria to set up a regulatory model for cannabis.
And there's clearly an appetite for it in the electorate. I mean, you've got two MPs elected to Victoria's upper house in you know, the last state election. The electorate clearly is affirming of this.
Absolutely, James. I think the election of Rachel Payne and David Edishank into the Victorian Parliament is a real indicator. As well as that, the government's own surveys say that 80% of Australians do not believe that cannabis, the use of cannabis, should be a crime. So the vast majority of us believe that people should not be arrested, should not be charged for using or possessing cannabis. And on top of that, 11% of us, so about 2.4 million Australians, regularly use cannabis. So I think that shows the law is not working and is not in line with community attitudes and should be changed.
There must be a lot of economic benefits associated with the legalisation of cannabis. I mean, you've got tax, obviously, but there's also, you know, the black market goes away potentially.
Well, that's right. And that's a really important point, James, that you raise, because the cannabis market is, they estimate it's worth about $5 billion to organised crime. And that's spread over a bunch of different organisations. Now, that's $5 billion. Now, that's probably a small part of their revenue, but that revenue is a very solid bit of their revenue. It's a very solid part of their budget, and they use that for other things. So they use that to buy firearms. They use that to invest in other drugs and in you know, sort of meth labs, etc. So if you could take that $5 billion out of the illicit market and put it into the taxable market, you could really realise a significant amount of money for infrastructure, for health, for education. And we have seen exactly that in Canada and all in the states in the United and you know, half the states in the US. Now, I was recently in New York where a charity owns a cannabis store and they turned over $24 million in 1 year, and that money goes into housing and it goes into homelessness services and housing. Like, how great is that?
Yeah, and you also had that referendum in Ohio where about two-thirds of voters voted to change, you know, the law to allow cannabis to be legal. That's yes. Red State Ohio that's kind of, you know, deeply conservative and deeply MAGA.
Yep, absolutely. And this is the same in Australia. Like, the support for the legalisation of cannabis goes across the political spectrum. So there are people from the far right to people from the far left who support this. So this, you know, I think this, you know, government should not see this as a risk. They should see it as an opportunity. And I think Rachel and David have been doing some really great work in the Victorian Parliament, and I think they are slowly convincing their colleagues that they don't need to be afraid of this type of reform, and in actual fact, it will be very popular.
I know you're running for the Senate federally, but how close are we in Victoria, do you think, for cannabis to be legalised?
Look, as I say, we actually need to change that federal law before any state can enact cannabis legislation or regulation. What we can do in Victoria initially is effectively set up a decriminalisation model, and that would enable people to possess cannabis, to grow small amounts, and possibly to share it with others. But we can't go any further than that without changing the federal Act. But that would be a very good step, and it would bring us largely into line with the ACT, where our federal politicians live for half of the year, which allows the legal use and possession and growth of cannabis.
And
so
that's
if I was successfully elected, I could use cannabis legally when I was sitting in the Senate, but I would be arrested if I did the same thing in Victoria.
Amazing, isn't it? And that legislation in Canberra, in the ACT, that's been there for decades.
Well, yep, you're right, James. And it actually started in the 1990s. They then, numerous sort of conservative Canberra governments then sort of paired that original legislation back to the point where it didn't really mean anything and it was made largely illegal again. But then, yes, about 5 years, 4 or 5 years ago, the ACT took on a much more ambitious decriminalisation model. And guess what? You know, the sky hasn't fallen in. They're saying there's been no impact on the numbers of people who use cannabis in the ACT. It's remained stable pre and post law reform. And which was people's probably most biggest concern, was around road safety. And they found that there has been no increase at all in cannabis being, you know, people being arrested for driving while under the influence or impaired with cannabis.
You'd save a lot of money on policing, and also, you know, the effects of criminalisation, of course, ruins a lot of lives.
The stigma and the impact. So, you know, as many of the listeners would know, that if you have a criminal record, this really limits the jobs that you can apply for. It limits the countries that you can visit. For example, I'm not sure that anyone wants to visit the US at the moment, but if you had a drug conviction, you could not visit the US without going through a lot of hoops. So, yeah, it can have a really dramatic impact on people's lives. And we also know, when you look at the statistics around people who are criminalised for cannabis use and possession, they come from lower socioeconomic backgrounds. They come from from our diverse communities. So, you know, and really tragically, our Aboriginal brothers and sisters are completely overrepresented in all of the stats around arrests for the use and possession of cannabis.
What are the police saying to you when you have discussions with them about decriminalisation?
Privately, they are all for it. You know, they really feel that they could be doing far more important work. And also, alongside decriminalisation comes the ability to invest in health and education. Those are the things that we need to protect people from, you know, falling into our criminal justice system. If we can support people, whether it's their mental health or their physical health, and if we can support people in staying in school and getting education, whether that's just general education or also education about the use of drugs, that is clearly a good thing. In fact, the most, I think it ends in 2025, but it was the 2020-2025 Victorian Police Drug Strategy, was largely around a decriminalisation model. You know, they thought that drug use should be treated as a health issue, not a criminal one.
And, of course, Australia's got a great climate for growing marijuana and the benefits for farming. I mean, it could give agriculture a boost, which is a reason why the National Party should be backing it.
This is exactly right. And when we also, like, we're talking about just the legalisation of adult use cannabis, let's not forget the medicinal cannabis market in Australia is growing exponentially, and our Australian farmers cannot keep up with the demand for medicinal cannabis. So almost 80% of the medicinal cannabis that is prescribed in Australia now is imported from Canada. Now, that makes no sense. I mean, that country is not designed, does not have the environment to grow cannabis. And here we are in this beautiful island country that could really be providing medicinal cannabis, adult use cannabis and hemp for the rest of the world. So I agree with you, it's something that parties and our candidates and members of parliament who represent those regional areas should be jumping on board with.
I mean, the uses for hemp are quite extraordinary. Apart from rope, it can be used for building products to actually make houses. It's extraordinary.
It is. It's kind of an unbelievable. When you start listing all of the things that hemp can do, it becomes almost a magical plant. I mean, it actually, the seeds in it are in a very high protein. So at the basic level, it's a high protein food, not just for humans, but it's also a very good high protein feed for animals. The fibres of it. So I was reading somewhere that 1 acre of hemp can build a 3-bedroom house. And 1 acre of hemp will mature in 3 months, as opposed to the 20 years that you would need to build that same house in timber. So it is a remarkable plant. You can make concrete out of it. You can make a hempcrete out of it that is completely, you know, when you think of the environmental impacts of making concrete, if you're making hempcrete, that actually is a positive from a carbon securing level. It also can be made into plastics. Like, it's this incredibly strong fibre that is easily worked with. And so, yes, fabrics, we obviously clothes, and as you said, rope and sails, there's that. But on top of that, there's also plastics, concrete, timber-like products. And recently I was just listening to a seminar where in Victoria at the Olivia Newton-John Wellness Centre, they are trialling and looking into cannabis and particularly some of the cannabinoids as an antibiotic for some of those really antibiotic-resistant infections that hospitals are grappling with today.
You're listening to an interview with Fiona Patton from the Legalised Cannabis Party on Community Radio 3CR. There are so many industry organisations that surely would be supporting legalisation. I mean, you must be talking to quite a few of them, yeah?
We've certainly been in conversation with a number of associations. And I think, you know, organisations like the Farmers Federation have certainly come on board with hemp and are coming around with medicinal cannabis. Medicinal cannabis still has considerable amount of stigma out there, and we still know that there's a large number of GPs who won't prescribe it. So if I was successfully elected, that's certainly something that I want to do. I want to have a roots and branch review of the medicinal cannabis program in Australia to ensure that we can really boost farmers to start supplying the ever-growing market for medicinal cannabis, but that we can also educate GPs about the uses of medicinal cannabis in Australia.
I'm really surprised to hear that, you know, some GPs are anti-medicinal cannabis, because, I mean, they must see so many sick kids and their parents who are just desperate for it.
That's right. And also we're seeing it's got, it's well known that the cannabinoids, particularly CBD, has a really significant anti-inflammatory effect on our bodies through our endocannabinoid system. So we're finding that it reduces the amount of pain relief that people, particularly older people, are needing. And that's just with a CBD. That's without the intoxicating effects, low intoxicating effects, mind you, of THC. But also we're seeing that studies are showing that in communities where there's large benzodiazepine use, which we know is highly addictive and is linked to the very high level of overdose deaths, accidental overdose deaths we have in Australia, that medicinal cannabis can actually perform just as well as benzodiazepines for anxiety and particularly for sleep.
The legalised cannabis party has candidates running for the Senate around the country. It looks like every state and territory you've got a candidate for the Senate, yeah?
Indeed we do. We're not actually running in the ACT. That's the only state, the only territory that we won't have a candidate in, I'm afraid. But we're running in all Senate seats across the country, and we'll be running in selected lower house seats. I think in Victoria, we haven't put all our applications in, but I think at the moment it's looking like we'll be running in about 15 or 16 lower house seats. So, yeah, it's a big growth for this party, and you know it's had four MPs elected across the country, one in New South Wales, one in WA, and as we mentioned earlier, two in Victoria. So it's a very fast growing party.
I'm imagining that a few political parties might be reaching out to you, Fiona, on preferences. Any preference whisperers making contact, perhaps?
Yes. Yeah, the dark art of preferencing. Fortunately, with the federal Senate, there's none of that sort of backroom dealing. There's no group voting tickets. It really is that you... All voters mark 1 to 6 on their Senate ballot. But, you know, there certainly is a benefit to being on other people's how-to-vote cards in that top six. So, yes, there's negotiations going on with lots of different parties about, you know, where we place each other on our respective how-to-vote cards. But, you know, hopefully we'll get enough first preferences to get us over the line, because it looks like we are up against the trumpet of patriots for the 6th Senate seat in Victoria. And as we know, in 2022, Clive Palmer did win that seat with the Victorian Senator Ralph Babbitt, who many people can't believe actually is from Victoria.
Well, surely your campaign would have more traction with a broader section of voters.
I hope so, James. Of course, I don't have the $200 million that Clive Palmer will be putting into it. But yes, we are a grassroots party, and the pun is absolutely intended. We're a grassroots party, and we hope that we will have broad coverage with, you know, people who just who want to see law reform progress, but hopefully also for people who can remember my work in the Victorian State Parliament, where I think I was able to, you know, play well with others and affect change that some people thought wouldn't have been possible.
Look, I have to just go back to preferences. Have the Coalition or Labor reached out to you?
Yes, they have. They have. We're still in those negotiations, so it's probably... I probably can't say any more, but yeah, look, we're speaking to absolutely every party that we can.
You mentioned the Victorian Parliament. Do you miss it?
Yes and no. I do find myself tuning into it quite often and listening to it, mainly because I want to see what Rachel and David are doing, because I think they're doing some really terrific work. But I was up there the other day, and it's sort of nice to see all the old colleagues. But I do feel like now there's unfinished business at that federal level. So whether that's on cannabis reform, but also on things like women's reproductive health, on equality issues, and even on voluntary assisted dying, there's some federal legislation that we need to fix to improve the system in Victoria. So while I really loved my time in the Victorian Parliament, I kind of like to have an opportunity to do something similar at the federal level.
And based on what you just said before, that sounds realistic. If you're up for that sixth spot, there's a very good chance you'll be going to Canberra as a senator.
That sixth spot is a lottery. You know, the Greens will win a seat. They can't win two, but they certainly will get a Senate seat. Labor will probably get two Senate seats. And the Libs will get two Senate seats, and then that sixth Senate seat will fall. It's myself, the Trumpeter Patriots, and possibly One Nation could be in the mix. And that's what we saw in 2022. And in fact, Ralph Babbitt got over us and was elected on a slightly higher vote from us, but hopefully we'll get a higher vote now that we've got, you know, state members elected who are doing some really terrific work, not just in cannabis, but in a whole range of important issues.
And that surely must be an advantage for your federal campaign, having colleagues at the state level who have been elected that give you a brand and give you some political traction.
I think so, James. I think it certainly improves the recognition of the party and the understanding that the party, you know, is a real party. We're not just a protest party, and that we can be very effective legislators. I mean, the two of them, well, I had done a lot of work on medicinal cannabis and driving and the unfairness and the discrimination that medicinal cannabis patients were experiencing. They got it over the line. And we now see they were successfully able to negotiate with the government a change in legislation that now is the first in Australia that enables Victorian medicinal cannabis patients to have some recourse in the courts against losing their licence. And I suspect we will now see other states follow the initiative that was really championed by Rachel and David.
Fiona Patton, great to hear your voice on 3CR. Thanks heaps for talking to us today.
Thanks, James. Lovely to speak to you.
3CR.